Blog Talk Radio.
Such a two-faced
Yeah.
What a warmongering prick. I mean, why anybody would want this guy anywhere is beyond me. Why he stayed in Arizona, it's got to be rigged. Mm-hmm. Two top U.S. senators on Tuesday introduced a bill that would retroactively support America's military role in Libya, and raging debate over whether President Obama flouted the law by not getting prior congressional approval. I believe we will find a strong bipartisan majority that is in favor of authorizing our current military operations in Libya, seeing the mission through to success, as Republican U.S. Senator John McCain, one of the authors of the bill. God, what a piece of crap this man is. And you didn't tell me Kerry is probably the other piece of crap that sponsored this. Here we go. Let's see.
I believe we will find a strong...
Yeah, I just read that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That is a message that Libyan President Muammar Gaddafi needs to hear. It is a message that Gaddafi's opponents fighting to liberate their nation need to hear, McCain told his fellow senators during floor debate in the Senate, as he urged to vote on the measure as soon as possible. The veteran Republican lawmaker admitted to harboring some reservations about how U.S. military assets were used in support of the NATO military action, and said he would have much preferred it if Obama had received congressional sanctions to use U.S. military might in Libya. But said McCain, at the end of the day, I believe the president did the right thing by intervening to stop a looming humanitarian disaster in Libya. I don't even believe there was one. Democratic co-sponsor, Senator John Kerry,
coward of the country, you know, and the idiot of the country, put together a bill. Isn't that amazing? Assured fellow lawmakers that the measure would not allow an unending military role in Libya. Kerry is a complete and utter, God. The resolution is not a blank check for the president, not at all, Kerry said. This resolution authorizes a limited use of American forces in supporting role. It says specifically that the Senate does not support the use of ground troops in Libya, said Kerry, and chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And how he weaseled his way into that position is beyond me.
Yes, Tweedledee and Tweedledum here.
And Obama. Let's see. Kerry McCain introduced their bill amid a turbulent congressional debate over whether or not Obama is in compliance with the War Powers Act, its 1973 resolution, requiring any U.S. president to seek congressional approval before declaring war. Obama has been accused by various U.S. lawmakers, including many within his own Democratic Party, of flouting the law that he lent U.S. military support to a NATO military operation in Libya. One incensed Democratic lawmaker in the House of Representatives has vowed to propose later this week an amendment to a defense bill banning any funds from which used to finance the U.S. operation in Libya, while another House Democrat said he would introduce a measure to cut off congressional funding for the $10 million per week Libya operation. The White House insisted in a letter sent to Congress last week that the War Powers Act, which has been largely ignored by past presidents, does not apply to events in Libya because there are no U.S. troops on the ground there. But the strange bedfellows nature of congressional alliances over the controversy also has seen some top Republicans, including McCain, come down on Obama's side over the use of U.S. military assets in Libya. And meanwhile, another top Republican senator on matters of defense and security, Lindsey Graham, another piece of crap, okay, derided the War Powers Act as unconstitutional, not worthy of the paper it's written on. I think it's an infringement on the power of the commander-in-chief. These guys are complete and utter traitors. All right? Lindsey and McCain and Kerry, these bastards are traitors to this country. All right? I think it is an infringement on the power of the commander-in-chief, he told NBC News, adding he would not back efforts to defund the operations. And Republican House Speaker John Boehner has also issued veiled threats about Congress tightening its purse strings over the Libya venture. What?
Yeah, right.
God damn.
Here's something that might be interesting up here.
What's that?
These videos. China Mirage City, Hologram Project Ruby.
But we're not going to see it.
Must-see video. We'll have to see that at some point.
Yeah, we can't.
That's
right
on
now.
This site. so we'll have to see
that. You can go to the site. It's called the Activist Post, right? It doesn't say .com or anything. It's just Activist Post. So check that out. Freaking unbelievable, unbelievable sons of bitches.
Okay.
Just unbelievable sons of bitches. These guys are crimes, criminals. Agenda 21 indoctrination going global at warp speed.
It is time to sound the alarm yet again on Agenda 21. Much of the focus of critical LA-21 discussion is centered on its progress in the United States, but it too has been making rapid inroads in Mexico as to the rest of the planet. As we all know, or we should be aware of, Mexico is purported ground zero for testing and total implementation of iris scanning biometric identification technology, according to the Hoyos Group, formerly Global Rainmakers, which is said to eventually encompass the globe. Their estimate is 10 years. Youth here will soon be obligated to receive national biometric ID cards with a view of moving on to the general population. This is all for our safety. Please try to ignore the fact that U.S. agency ATF has been arming drug cartels with heavy weaponry. Please also make an attempt to pretend you never heard drug cartels have been moving massive amounts of cocaine and heroin to the U.S. with the oversight of the Department of Justice, the FBI, the DEA, and ICE.
Not to mention all of the banks that are, all the major
funding.
Banks that are
washing and laundering.
Right. And where are we?
Let's see.
Next. Harper and Obama.
Yep.
Harper and Harper's Canada's dickhead.
Yep.
And Obama's recent agreement on the common security perimeter has stated that the move to work toward common technical standards for the collection, transmission, and matching of biometrics that enable the sharing of information on travelers in real time. We know that the 1980 Bilderberg report states that the goal of working toward a North American common bloc and the 1989 U.S.-CAN bilateral trade agreement added Mexico into the mix in 1994 with NAFTA. One can assume that the 2011 U.S.-CAN common security perimeter will eventually add in a bit of Mexican spice to spruce things up. These developments also mirror the 2005 Council on Foreign Relations Task Force objectives.
Agenda 21 indoctrination. Some private schools south of the border have now begun replacing traditional courses on society and economics with courses on environment and sustainability. The replacement of the economics social studies course with an environmental course is de facto giveaway to the nature of economics social studies course with an environmental course, nature of the new doctrine, one seeking to support traditional economic and societal structure. Based on pseudoscience, the green global warming movement seeks to serve as an excuse to restructure society as a whole, establish a global centrally planned economy and a political structure, the planetary regime, working through regional government. Remember the failed 2010 Cancun UN climate change conference stated the possibility of forced relocation of endangered parts of the Mexican population based on UN dictate to be executed by the national government as part of the environmental agenda? It is humorous how they changed the name from global warming to climate change because the planet may not be warming after all, and nobody can deny that the climate changes. The climate changes just as the sun rises. Fighting climate change would be like fighting the rising of the sun. Maybe we should nuke the sun. Yeah. In the new course, the topics include ecosystems, environment, society, development, and sustainability. It focuses heavily on the importance of the environment and understanding it from a global perspective and not beginning from a local perspective.
Furthermore, there is a heavy focus on resource availability, demand, and population growth. The underlying thread of the eugenic nature of the environmental movement and their utter obsession with human population and the eradication of the cancer known as man is clearly evident here. Under the final topic of sustainable development, students examine the concept economically, socially, environmentally, politically, and technologically. If this isn't a viewpoint of total restructuring of our society, I don't know what is. And finally, students are to analyze the characteristics and applications of Agenda 21. Mexico is in the international context and the actions of regional and local level.
How is the program implemented exactly? Take a cue from the Bilderberg syndicate structure. The heads of academia, as with any other field, attend the World Economic Forum and so forth. It's easy to go back to your institution and out of peer pressure or inside knowledge, implement the agenda. The teachers then go ahead and put it to use in the classroom, generally have no idea of the true nature of the material they are teaching, and merely superficially study the material themselves before passing it on to the unsuspecting populace.
The green culture has been created by academia via the policy-making network and institutes. Government, which has accepted this doctrine from the think tanks without question, manufactured media consent, and ultimately the social pressures this all creates. The question is kooky, to defy is heresy. It was only a few months back that the high priest of the Gaia religious cult, Al Gore, came to bless this country. He reportedly received anywhere from tens of thousands of dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars for insurance of the right. The issuance of the right. The glitz and glamour of his celebrity boiled over the crowd. In a private after session, a brainwashed university student even asked His Highness in very serious manner as to how this would all improve the New World Order. In fact, a month later, the International Relations Conference was titled, Would You Believe It? The New World Order.
Green World Religion. As documented in a recent series of reports, the sustainability doctrine is infesting all higher education. It emphasizes maximal conservation of resources and government regulation to the near exclusion of other approaches. Every single student must be knowledgeable and engaged in sustainability. The analysis theory of the movement emphasized its economic and political imperatives. At one level, this is largely accurate. The sustainability movement is heir to the disappointments of European socialists and ex-communists.
It sprang into existence in 1987 with a report on the UN Commission on Environment and Development, chaired by Norwegian Prime Minister Gro Harlem Brundtland. The connection to land use planning, the commitment to extraterritorial regulation, and the readiness to bypass democratic procedure are in the DNA of the sustainability movement. A great deal of its mischief, as in the persistently misleading pronouncements from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, stems from the grounding of the sustainability movement in attitudes far removed from American political and cultural traditions. But the traction that the movement has gained in the United States doesn't have much to do with spontaneous admiration for UNESCO bureaucrats or international elites who jet around the world promoting massive transfers of wealth to impoverished nations. Those ideas eventually find welcome in the minds of students who have worked their way deep inside the concept that they are now citizens of the world. The movement's mass appeal lies elsewhere. Sustainability is, first of all, an emotional summons, one that combines elemental fears with hopes of salvation. It draws heavily on Judeo-Christian imagery and a secularized but not very deeply disguised Christian narrative of a good creation corrupted by man's human sin and headed for disaster, which might be staved off through sufficient acts of penitence, like giving up the internal combustion engine, not to mention bottled water and cafeteria trays. The religious narrative is interwoven with other strands of Western mythology. It isn't hard to find Rousseau's imaginary picture of a man uncorrected by civilization flittering into the dreams of sustainutopians. The movement expresses a longing for lost innocence, for the re-enchantment of nature, and one of its proponents puts it, and for an easily captured high ground on which alienation from mass consumerism can be played out as though it had positive content. Somehow we can feel better about ourselves if we believe the world is going to wreck and ruin because of the heedlessness and greed of others. That's true, but it's the heedlessness and greed of the bastards that put this sustainability thing that want to kill two-thirds of the world population by 2050.
Well, then we even have to do that. We'll all be so poor, we'll be scrambling around.
You know, but all these guys got to do is read the goddamn book. But, you know, the world, you know, oh, my God, you know, it's just trying to get, I mean, trying to get this stuff through. We've been talking about this for 10 years, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, so few people listen. It's just, but yet it's happening. It's happening all around us. It's happening in chemtrails. It's happening in genetically modified foods. It's happening in, you know, HARP and every other thing that we see going on. It's just so damn frustrating. And it thrives because it's a substitute religion that demands a manageable degree of expiation, self-sacrifice, and guilt. Not that any of this is anything new. The ancient agenda has always been and will always be the vie for total global domination. The only thing that changes is the excuse used to put fear into the population, in that they would go along. The Darwinist eugenicist and brother of Brave New World, Aldous Julian Huxley, is imparting 1948 speech, told us we must look at our problems as part of a single world problem, where the several nations must learn to make adjustments in the newest, in the interest of the whole body of nations. That he thinks of such problems as overpopulation. Furthermore, he stressed that the need to develop citizens of the world, of one world of the human mind, as he welcomed the inauguration of a prominent Mexican politician in the next Director General of UNESCO, James Torres Bodet. And one key, now this is almost done here, and one key dilemma I come to over and over again is, if nation states have failed and are run by corrupt agents, as almost all are, what in the world makes them think that a single world state will function any better? It totally defies logic. And if you can hear this, you are the resistance. Please send out your stories, write of your experiences, and put them in comment sections. P.S. Is this still crazy talk for you? Well, don't take it from me. Here is Joe Diaz, a cog in the UN machine, discussing the need for global governance, Agenda 21, as part of the nation-state takeover timeline of 2050. And I'll read between the lines, bureaucrat, oh speak. I am forced merely to link to the website, as embedding YouTube material may soon mean you are a terrorist. Oh, that's so true. And I want you to go to, please go to...
why isn't he put his stuff on, your stuff?
What's that?
It's important to put all stuff on the internet, all things, to combat this. And
absolutely.
People need
absolutely.
To make videos, they need to speak out, they need to get online.
Everything they can do.
They need to do everything they can do.
Anything and everything. And go to Activist Post. Again, great, great site. Under food tyranny, E. coli, the new terrorist threat. Oh, boy.
You think so?
Yeah.
Europe's E. coli outbreak was traced to multiple produce. The organic bean sprouts, then not, then settled adamantly on those organic bean sprouts. This will not make sense to inform health freedom supporters, as E. coli stems from unsanitary conditions such as factory farms and CAFOs. I'm not sure what this is. That is where animal waste can run off into nearby fields. But the bean sprout story is what the public is buying, whether the the threat is manufactured or not, whether this deadly resistant strain is lab engineered or real, the question is, what does it mean now? Oh, they have those horrible factory farms for poor animals and...
It was Henry Kissinger who said, control food and you control the people. Mentioned another method of control. If people were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence, it is then that all people of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. And like clockwork, U.S. media sources around the sound of the alarm, E. coli will come here.
Mm-hmm.
We must tighten down and quickly implement the Food Safety Modernization Act and ban the unpasteurized and non-irradiated. The FDA needs more power, more money, and healthy foods. Deemed the vessel of E. coli terrorism becomes a criminal accomplice that must be stopped, irradiated, banned. There is no question that the threat and proposed solutions will serve Big Ag and the implementation of Codex Alimentarius guidelines, which is to stop all organic foods and people from growing their own. CNN keeps showcasing an opinion piece called The Other E. Coli Threat, Raw Milk Calling for Its Banishment. The writer called raw food, particularly unpasteurized milk and juice, a very specific public safety risk, and that the raw milk could contain a massive E. coli outbreak in the U.S., even though it mostly comes from drugged-up factory farm ground beef. That calling raw food and natural products healthy is a myth, and the proponents are irresponsible. But David Gumbert, Raw Milk Revolution, was just waiting for that very shoe to drop in the wake of the world's foodborne illnesses. How bean sprouts across the globe can be tied to an unfounded threat of the unpasteurized here defies all logic. But the aggressive witch hunt will only continue. And another article asked, does new food safety law prevent E. coli in U.S.? No, actually, how does a law prevent deadly infection? In its implementation, it continues to say that the Obama called for the spending of $955 million on the FDA food safety program this fiscal year. But the FDA stated in a document late May that it wouldn't be enough. And 2012 is a crucial year for FSMA implementation.
I'm not sure what that means.
I don't know what that is. I think that's the food, that's that
program.
That program, yeah. The new program, okay, that's going to ban all organic foods and stuff. And lack of funding at this stage will stall essential foundation-laying efforts that are key to long-term success. New York Times asks, could it happen here? And also mentions the needed funding that heartless Congress actually wants to curb spending. It concludes, ensuring the safety of the food we eat is not a luxury, it's an essential service. Unbelievable. And that dozens of deaths in Europe also served to distract the public from noticing the thousands that die each year from FDA-approved drugs, that 80% of antibiotics go to livestock, that antibiotic-resistant MRSI kills more annually than AIDS, or that majority of foodborne illnesses come from non-organic USDA-approved food, all of which will remain safe and unchanged during the coming FMSA scourge. And safety officials have done a lousy job protecting public health and have every chance in the world to do so. But look, everyone, E. coli over there. More money, more money, more power. No, it's worse than that. It's not bumbling incompetence. It's direct intent. Our FDA has increased powers under the Food Modern Safety Act, which comes from Codex Alimentarius, created by the Food and Agriculture Organization and World Health Organization, which are agencies of the UN, and all entities that claim to protect the public, feed the hungry, and help the sick. A drive-by knowledge of those agencies and guidelines does not paint a picture of safety, health, food choice, or sovereignty. It is too contradictory and unfathomable for the good-natured who might instead begin to ask, are we funding and empowering those who wish us harm? How long will people stomach the fabricated reality? Their solution to the problem, to the concocted threat, banishment, punishment, seizures, irradiation, to be continued.
And this I haven't seen much of that.
What's that?
Their punishment.
They're fining people. They're picking up their farms. They're going in and they're banning nutritionists. They're banning
talked about on the mainstream media.
No,
not
banning,
a word.
No, you got to go to the alternate sources, and unfortunately, those are drying up too because they're getting bought off, you know, or bought out. You know, everybody's got a price, damn it. You know. Jesus. Oh boy. Anyway. A Voice in the Wilderness. That's the name of this one. Of this blog. I don't know, folks. I'm getting pretty sick. Everything bigger and now also brighter in Texas. Do you want to read this?
I already read it.
There you go.
Oh, I read it before. Well,
to the people.
Yeah. Okay. In Texas, Governor Rick Perry today signed a law that will free Texans from the federal government's impending incandescent light bill ban. The measure sent Governor Rick Perry for consideration, he subsequently signed it, lets any incandescent light bulb manufactured in Texas and sold in the state avoid the authority of federal government or the repeal of the 2007 Energy Independence Act that starts phasing out some incandescent light bulbs next year. Texas wasn't the first state to explore this kind of legislation. South Carolina has advanced a similar bill, and last year the Arizona legislature passed a bill to the same effect, but Governor Jan Brewer vetoed it. A few issues illuminate the consumer will to choose, and the desperate faith in consumers of liberals and conservatives, as revealed by proposed policies, as clearly as the federal government's light bulb ban. As Heritage Foundation energy analyst Nick Loris puts it, consumers can make intelligent decisions on their own without the government forcing choices upon them. Not surprisingly, environmental groups, chief among them the New York-based Natural Resources Defense Council, wanted Perry to veto the bill. But the governor's slick signature on this is yet one more reason to like the man many want to run for president.
Not me, unfortunately. I
think you should be
able
to.
It's good that he does that,
yeah.
But he's got too many bones, man, to deal with. I don't want to deal with it. Fort Calhoun nuclear plant, New Fukushima.
Let's play that.
Yeah, it's about 7 minutes long. But
that's
it talks
in this
about,
country.
Yeah, that's right.
This is very serious, folks.
Here you go, folks. Right by Russian TV.
All right, I want to switch gears now and talk about an issue that a few of you, our viewers, have been asking us to shed some light on. It's an issue that not many news organizations are talking about at all. And this time it involves the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant in Nebraska. About 2 weeks ago, there was a fire inside the plant that at the time knocked out the cooling system in certain parts. Officials there say it was restored within about 90 minutes. But now there's cause for new concern. Take a look. This is the rising Missouri River. It has flooded the area, and experts, including the power company, says that high volumes of water could pose a threat to the electric system. There has been an ongoing no-fly zone here as well, but officials say it has nothing to do with potential radiation that could be being released from the plant. In fact, they say everything at the plant is just fine. Now, this situation may not be the same as what we've been seeing unfolding at the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan, but you'll remember there as well, several attempts by the government and officials to downplay the threat, to say everything was going to be fine, which we now know just wasn't true. So the point is, we should talk about it. there is reason enough to be suspicious. Joining me now is Tyson Slocum, director of the Public Citizens Energy Program. And Tyson, let's talk about this. What we're seeing in Fort Calhoun, the flooding around the nuclear plant, how much of a danger does this pose?
Well, it clearly poses a risk because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is the agency that regulates all 104 nuclear power plants in the United States, raised the level of concern level for this plant to almost to a critical level. So it's clear that regulators in Washington, D.C. are concerned enough to raise the level of concern. But the bottom line here is that the lack of public information about our nuclear power plants, particularly after September 11, 2001, it was designed to keep critical information about vulnerable energy infrastructure like nuclear power plants away from terrorism, but what it's done is keep this critical information away from us so that we, the public, lawmakers, and journalists don't have quick, easy, independent access to important information about the operations and concerns about these plants. And so part of the problem with this situation has been the lack of clarity in some of the public statements by the operator of the nuclear power plant and by federal officials. And so getting more independent access, I think, is going to be critical.
But we do have some new information. In fact, a report just released today by the Associated Press, it was the culmination of a year-long investigation, found that there is a pretty tight, uncomfortably close relationship, in my book, between the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and a lot of these power companies and the nuclear energy field in the United States. Basically, what this showed, this report, it was a very in-depth report. It showed that when you have things like, leaky valves, clogged up pipes, leaking radiation, instead of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission saying, all right, we need to figure out how to fix this, they say, you know what? The rules and regulations, they were just too conservative before, so let's loosen them, make them a little more lax. This, to me, is frightening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Public Citizen has raised these concerns along with some members of Congress, like Representative Ed Markey, who's on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's been trying to get more information about the lack of toughness by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on the domestic nuclear industry, particularly in light of what's happened in Japan. Now, in October, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually cited this Nebraska power plant for not having adequate safety and security measures to deal with flooding from the Missouri River. And they put the nuclear power plant on watch, on notice, essentially. The plant has allegedly come into compliance with those findings, but the fact is that the rising floodwaters do pose a risk. And from a bigger picture scenario here, it does raise the issue of whether or not nuclear power is viable going forward. There are a number of risks, and the Obama administration has committed significant taxpayer resources to build a new generation of nuclear power plants. And the question is this an affordable route? Are there more cost-effective, less risky alternatives like renewable energy and energy efficiency that might be able to meet our energy needs going forward?
You talk about this new generation of building new plants. I think it's really interesting. And tell me if I'm oversimplifying this too much. But these plants, most of these plants, were built back in the 60s. And they were built being able to last 40 years, but under the idea that most of them would probably be upgraded, renovated, or totally remodeled long before 40 years. Well, now it's been more than 50 years, and a lot of them continue to get their permits renewed. So this is what I think. You know, you have a car, and you have a bad part on the car. You either get it replaced or you get a new car. That's just not happening here.
That's right. And this particular plant that's threatened by the floodwaters in Nebraska, it was built in 1973. And you're absolutely right. Your point that these are very complex systems. There's a number of critical components. And as those components age, the risks get higher and higher. And so the question is, from a safety and security standpoint, does it make sense to start to phase out these aging reactors? And the price tag for new reactors is now $10 billion or more. And the question to American taxpayers should be, should we subsidize these, or should we think about some of the emerging technologies like wind and solar and energy efficiency that present far less risk but arguably greater return for the public?
And you have officials coming out here and saying this. You even have leaders of major countries like Germany coming out and saying this. But the fact is, That doesn't seem very likely in the United States for various reasons, between the different lobbying groups, between the power of the nuclear industry. What needs to happen? Does Fukushima need to happen here? What needs to happen in order to sort of change the entire tide of thinking here in this country?
Well, I definitely don't want a nuclear accident in the United States or anywhere else. And so I hope that it doesn't take an accident for us to recognize the huge risks and costs associated with nuclear power. I think it's evident just looking at the situation. We don't have a solution for the high-level radioactive waste. It's true that this Calhoun reactor, the waste is stored in dry casks that don't need as much water as the plants did in Japan. But the fact is that when we've got cost-effective alternatives like wind and solar available, when we have an optimized energy efficiency, why are we continuing to pursue expensive and risky nuclear power?
Certainly an important question. Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program.
Yeah, you know, it's all well and good, but, you know, again, you didn't go far enough in that for me. I mean, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is an arm of the nuclear industry. It's paid for by the nuclear industry. They're appointed by the nuclear industry, not by government. They have nothing to do with the government.
Basically, have a fox watching the head.
That's right. We've been down this road before, and Layla and I did a documentary 10 years ago on this, and we found out a whole hell of a lot of information, and never trusted nuclear power ever since. U.S. investigators reportedly say Yemen Salah hit by advanced U.S.-made missile. I read that these drones, they're making drones the size of bugs. You hear me?
Yep.
No.
I did, that they're making drones the size of, I think it's amazing what they're doing. I can't believe it.
Advanced-made missile, let's see what that is.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, I know.
Extremely graphic footage, Libyan children killed by NATO bombs. Oh, this is terrible. I don't want to watch something
like
that.
No, again, no.
And that wouldn't be useful anyway for our listeners to hear.
But just a day after admitting killing 9 civilians in a bungled airstrike, NATO has been accused by the Libyan authorities of causing at least another 15 deaths. The alliance confirmed it and carried out another bombing, has not responded to the allegations of civilian casualties. The Russian TV crew in Tripoli has shot some shocking footage of bodies mutilated in the NATO bomb.
Oh, that's terrible.
I don't think I'll...
I couldn't watch that.
U.S. to unveil Afghanistan's troop pullout.
He's speaking tonight on that, I think.
Yeah, he can speak all he wants. That ain't going to happen. Yeah. Oh, now he's withdrawing 15,000. So that's up from 5,000 yesterday. All right.
Israel returns nuclear waste to the United States.
Oh, right. Oh, that's great. Head of Israeli Nuclear Energy Commission, Shaul Horev, says Tel Aviv has returned nuclear waste from its Soke nuclear reactor to the United States. Want to read that one?
According to estimates, Israel has sent back at least dozens of kilograms, probably more, of 93% enriched uranium. The operation took place after Israel's Nuclear Energy Commission and the U.S. Department of Energy signed an agreement for the return of nuclear waste over a year and a half ago. Horev, who spoke at the International Atomic Energy Agency Ministerial Conference on Nuclear Safety in Vienna on Monday, did not specify the exact amount of waste Israel's daily Haaretz reported.
Now, where the hell are we going to put it? We can't put our own safety.
Yeah, keep your own stuff.
What, are they dumping it in the ocean? Let's see.
Following the agreement, an American ship collected nuclear waste from both Israel and Turkey. The Sorek Research Reactor is a small 5-megawatt facility that was donated to Israel by the U.S. within the framework of former U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower's Adams for Peace program. Israel also received 93% enriched uranium to fuel the reactor. The reactor has remained under IAEA supervision for years. The agreement with the U.S. does not apply to the Dimona nuclear reactor, where international sources believe Israel produces fissile material from uranium and makes plutonium for a stockpile of nuclear weapons, and waste from Dimona is not returned to the U.S. Harev also said the reactor at Dimona is 12 kilometers from the nearest town, a satisfactory distance in the event of a radioactive leak.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Sick of them. I mean, we just...
It's just,
yeah,
what
a joke. God. That's from Press TV.
Yeah, Iranian television. Oh, man. Well, U.S. Army base transfer in Japan delayed.
Titanium leaks from U.S. nuclear sites. Tritium. Tritium leaks from U.S. nuclear sites. Radioactive tritium has leaked from at least 48 of the 65 sites of commercial nuclear power sites in the United States, investigations have shown, according to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and records. Tritium, a radioactive form of hydrogen, has leaked through corroded pipes into the ground, and that the number and severity of the leaks are escalating, the Washington Post reported. Leaks from at least 37 of those facilities contain tritium concentrations, which sometimes exceeds the federal drinking water standard at hundreds of times. Great. Hey, poison us.
And here you have to go to the Iranian news to figure this one out. There have also been numerous reports of titanium leaks.
Three sites. Two in Illinois and one in Minnesota. Leaks have contaminated drinking wells near homes, but have not reached levels violating the drinking water standard. At a fourth site in New Jersey, tritium has leaked into an aquifer in a discharge canal feeding picturesque Barnegat Bay off the Atlantic Ocean. There have also been numerous reports of tritium leaks onto the surface waters across the U.S. over the past years. Any exposure to radioactivity increases the risk of cancer. So far, the tritium leaks have not shown any signs of health threat, federal and industry officials say, but it's hard to know how far some leaks have traveled in the groundwater. Tritium moves through the soil quickly when detected. It often indicates the presence of more powerful radioactive isotopes that are often spilled at the same time.
Pretty sick, huh?
It sure is.
But we go on.
The Einstein solution. I wonder what that is. David I. Gandhi, Einstein, the solution is us. Yeah. Chief Seattle's response.
Yeah, that was to the environment. About 10 minutes, it's just the chief talking. Let's go back. Yeah, I've got something to look at here in a second.
What are you looking for, Leo?
I'm trying to get back to my Facebook phone because I have.
Leo posted some things on Facebook that he wanted to share with you.
Yeah.
If he can find it.
Yeah, I can't seem to knock it up there, so I'll go back. Okay. As looking at a friend of mine, or a traditional hauler, learned from Leonard Emanuel at San Francisco, San Diego Folk Festival. You want to hear that?
No, I don't think so. I think
we deserve a hauler. Don't you think? This is a holler from Lewis Curtis, who's a music historian. Right here. I don't know.
Seems to be taking a long time.
Yeah.
To get that one.
Yeah. One more second here, and I think I'll pass the holler. Okay, I'm passing.
Lindsay Williams, America will default on its $14-plus trillion debt. Huh.
Sounds right. Okay.
it will probably affect your life more, and you've never heard this before, that it will affect your life more than any other one thing that you will hear me say, ever. Here goes. The elite are getting ready for the day that the revolution in the Middle East cuts off oil supply. They have a target date. I cannot give it to you. It's not too long off. They have a target date when the Middle East will be in such revolution. Started in Egypt. You remember I announced this on the Alex Jones Show. Alex is in your archives. I came on your show, and I said within 4 to 5.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to find out.
You
want to
hear
it?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Lunchtime, there's going to be a crisis in the Middle East, and you said Lindsay is going to be with Iran, and I went back to my Mr. X, and I said, is it Iran? And he said, no. He said, this is a crisis of another sort. And 4 months later, it started exactly as the elite had told me. Egypt first, Libya, Yemen, mark my words, it's going to go right on into Jordan, Syria. The final country will be Saudi Arabia. Their plans have not changed in any matter. They know the approximate date that they're going to be able to do.
But that's what Tucker said 2 weeks ago. You said this in October. Tucker's sources said that they do plan on bringing the entire Middle East down, and they're going to blame the oil prices on that and then blame the depression on that. But what you're saying about them gauging going to 150, you know, first it's $2, they go to $3, you get mad, they go back to 250. Then they go to $4, then they go back to $3. Then they go to $5, they go back.
Signature or something.
I have no idea what's going on.
Expression. And you can make them up yourself. I'm not
going to do that. He's just saying that the Middle East chaos is an
excuse. No, this whole guy finally came on. I understand, but the problem with that, one problem that I have with Alex Jones, all right, and I need to have stuff on Alex Jones, is that it's all so hypothetical, you know what I mean? It's all like, yeah, it might happen, or it's going to happen, or you get some guy, some, who the hell knows who Lindsay Williams is, I mean, but, you know, it's like, a lot of this stuff is just hyperbole and just, you know, hype. And, I mean, let's go for the real stuff. You know, what can I tell you? Does that make sense?
No, well, I think...
You thought that was really fascinating?
No, I think they had a good point. I think that's probably...
It probably is, but, you know, if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his ass every time he jumped, too. And it's like, you know, I'm sick and tired of listening to all these guys, like, you know... These projectors and predictors of gloom and doom, when in reality, you know, they've been predicting it for years and it didn't happen, but they get bigger and bigger audiences and they, you know, make people think it is. We're reading facts and we're not reading fiction.
Some of it.
You know? Yes. We are reading facts. What have we read that was fiction tonight?
Well, not fiction. They're just projecting into the future of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean,
let me finish saying what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at patterns of, you know, when oil prices go up, it's usually because of something like a war, or, you know, they create a problem, or, you know, so...
Yeah. Now, here's something that...
I mean, what they're saying isn't that far-fetched. Come on, Leo, you know.
Well... It's true. It's not far-fetched, but I'm sick and tired of hearing it. U.S. mayors call on Congress to end the wars. Did we hear about this? No. Did we hear about this anywhere? No. Of course not. But this is what happened. The mayors gathered on Friday, which is last week, in Baltimore for their annual U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting and discussed a resolution for a speedy end to the U.S. military spending abroad, arguing the domestic need for those funds should be prioritized. AP reported. The conference is an official nonpartisan organization for 1,200 cities with a population exceeding 30,000. The mayors also drew attention to the human cost of the war. The United States Conference of Mayors calls on the U.S. Congress to bring these war dollars home to meet vital human needs, promote job creation, rebuild our infrastructure, aid municipal and state governments, and develop a new economy based upon renewable, sustainable energy, the resolution said. Moreover, the resolution stated that the war cost the United States USD cost U.S. dollar $126 billion a year for the U.S. and that more than 6,000 U.S. soldiers have been killed so far. Alina Temple, a spokeswoman for the conference, noted that since the Vietnam War, there has not been a resolution calling for an end of a war and calling to end a war and instead redirect the money at home.
Well, if we did two things, if we ended being the world's policeman and if we raised taxes on the rich the way they should be reinstated them, we would be in fine shape economically.
Yeah.
We would have more money than we knew what to do with. We could improve our infrastructure. We could provide great health care. We could have a better education system.
Yeah.
You know, we could have so much. But no, they don't want that. The elite does not want us to have a good education system.
They want
us
to be stupid.
Yep.
They want everyone to be stupid. They want everybody to be morons and eat moron food and drink moron drinks and, just be completely stupid. And here is the final one for the night. Scientists successfully implant chip that controls the brain, allowing thoughts, memory, and behavior to be transferred from one brain to another. There you go, folks.
Scientists working at the University of Southern California, home of the Department of Homeland Security's National Center for Risk and Economic Analysis of Terrorism Events, have created an artificial memory system that allows thoughts, memories, and learned behavior to be transferred from one brain to another. In a scene right out of George Orwell's novel, a team of scientists working in the fields of neural engineering and biometrics microelectronic systems have successfully created a chip that controls the brain and can be used as a storage device for long-term memories. In studies, the scientists have been able to record, download, and transfer memories into how the host with the same chip implanted. The advancement in technology brings the world one step closer to a global police state and the reality of absolute mind control. More terrifying is the potential for implementation of what was only science fiction fantasy, the thought police, where the government reads people's memories and thoughts and then rehabilitate them through torture before they ever even commit a crime based on a statistical computer analysis showing people with certain types of thoughts are likely to commit a certain type of crime in the future. We already preemptively invade nations and torture alleged terrorist suspects with absolutely no due process of law. So the idea of preemptively torturing a terrorist suspect beforehand to prevent them from committing an act of terrorism in the future really isn't that far-fetched an idea. Perhaps a less sensational example than those I just depicted out of Orwell's famous dystopian novels would be using the technology as it is depicted in the modern-day Matrix movies, in which computer programs are uploaded into people's brains, allowing them to instantly learn how to perform a wide variety of tasks. This is exactly the Smart Planet uses in their write-up on the USC press release. Let's see.
Yeah, this goes on and on.
It goes on.
It
tells you all
on.
About the studies.
Yeah, all these different studies. You can check this out. Let me give you the site. Alexander Higgins' blog. Alexander Higgins' blog. Right.
Or go to David Icke.
Or you can go to David Icke's site, but it's not on his current one. It's on the...
Yeah.
Previous ones. But you can check Alexander Higgins' blog. Fascinating article.
Oh, boy.
And we are all done. The night is done. I want to thank everybody.
Yeah.
Who joined us. And we've got about 43 seconds left. And
you'll be on tomorrow?
Yeah. I'll be on tomorrow with some... last week I did a reading by Robert Frost.
Oh, nice. You've always liked Robert Frost.
We had a nice
Frost.
Audience for that, too.
Yeah.
So we will be doing something
poetic
or whatever. I'm not sure.
And
but we'll be into
we
the
will
fourth
be on
dimension.
This Friday. We have a break, but we'll be back again on Tuesday.
Yeah. So join us tomorrow. Join me tomorrow, and join Lila and I together next Tuesday.
And from me, I hope you have a great weekend, folks.
And me too.